Intervju Radija Študent.
Lep pozdrav, poslušate frekvenco 89,3 MHz in RŠ Intervju z enim izmed ustanoviteljev slavne založbe Hassel Audio, Ben UFO. Založba ustanovljena leta 2007, kot začela kot nek outsider v dubstepu, z leti pa vnesla neko novo perspektivo v dubstep sceni. Skozi leta je izdala veliko singlov, med drugim tudi tako nova, kot tudi stara, zveneča imena, kot so bili Joe, Blavan in na vse zadnje tudi Pearson Sound. Izmed treh ustanoviteljev te založbe Hassel Audio, poleg Pangeje, Pearson Sounda, je Ben UFO tisti, ki se produkcije še ni lotil, kar je mogoče tudi razlog za zakasnelo oziroma mogoče zamudo njegove svetovne slave. Ampak sedaj ga imamo priložnost slišati tudi v Ljubljani, v klubu K4 bo namreč nastopil ob, mislim da, po polnoči enkrat, kar bomo prenašali tudi v Radiju Študent, še predtem pa si imamo priložnost pogovoriti z njim uživo in izvedeti vse, kar se mota po njegovi glavi in tudi kar bo pripravo za današnji večer. Hello, Ben.
Hi, how's it going?
Great, how are you doing?
Yeah, really good. I had an amazing trip so far.
Tell us something about your DJ beginnings. When did you start to DJ? When did you discover dance music?
Well, I started to DJ when I was about 18 or 19. And I actually went for quite a long time without having turntables. I was just putting together a collection of records. When I started to buy the music I liked, the only way to get hold of it was on vinyl. So I was buying vinyl, but had nothing to listen to it on. Mm-hmm. And were it not for that, I probably wouldn't have started to DJ at all. About a year after I started buying records, I finally got my first pair of turntables. And just taught myself to mix. None of my friends were interested in it really. I grew up listening to sort of Scandinavian metal stuff.
Black metal, death metal.
Yeah, black metal mostly.
Interesting.
The kind of early 90s stuff. And a lot of my friends were into that. And so I kind of had no conception of how to go about mixing dance music really. And the way I eventually taught myself to mix was by buying two copies of the same record and putting them both on the, like, you know, putting them on the two turntables and trying to kind of beat juggle between them and stuff like that.
Wow, that's interesting. So you come from London, right?
Uh-huh, that's right.
But you went to study to Leeds.
That's right, yeah.
That's where you founded the first dubstep night in Leeds?
Yeah, yeah. We started a night called Roughage, which eventually led to the decision to start a record label, and that's a label that I run with Pearson Sound and Pangeje, who I got to know in Leeds, and I still feel as though we kind of keep a little piece of Leeds with us at all times, because the label was actually named after the street that we lived on. We lived on a street called Hassel Avenue.
Oh, that was a last minute decision.
Yeah,
as I recall.
Very last minute decision.
When you printed put out the first record.
Uh-huh.
At the dub plates and mastering studio, you decided it was Hassel Audio.
That's right, yeah, we were mastering our records at a studio called Transition at that point, which is the studio that basically made dubstep sound the way that it does. Mm-hmm.
So you were mostly listening to dubstep at the time?
Yeah, at that point, yeah, we wanted nothing except to be a strong dubstep label. Mm-hmm. We wanted to contribute something to that scene, because that was the scene that we were involved in at the time.
So you guys met at, where did you meet, in London or in Leeds?
So I met Kevin Pangeje first. He started studying at the same time as I did. We got to know each other because he was actually the only person that I could find in Leeds at the time who had a set of turntables in his room. We were staying in these like tiny, like cramped university dorm rooms, and I decided that I valued my space too much to clutter it up with like two turntables. So I just used to go around to Kevin's room, which, you know, you could barely walk around it. It was just like two turntables on the floor and a bed next to it. And so we'd like kneel on the floor, kneel down and just mix for a couple of hours. And like, we'd only stop when our knees started to hurt.
You met David at Forward.
That's right, yeah. David's a bit younger. We met at the Forward night in London, which was really kind of the first regular dubstep party. And we stayed in touch because it was quite rare to find somebody who was into the same stuff and who was also kind of a similar age and going up to Leeds to study. It seems kind of weird to think about it now because obviously dubstep is this like massive, huge global phenomenon or whatever. But you know, back then, you know, you'd be lucky to find anyone who
would even go.
Yeah, exactly.
To dubstep night.
Yeah. I mean, our first nights were in venues where maybe the maximum capacity was about 80 people, something like that, like really small.
But you also had, did you have a radio show?
We did,
At that time?
It started shortly after we started the night. We were doing a weekly radio show on a station called Sub FM, which broadcast on the internet. And somehow, I think because we were playing slightly different records to most other people, I was playing quite a lot of older UK garage records.
Some house also, I've heard.
Bits and pieces, yeah. Mm-hmm. We were playing some, I guess mostly kind of deeper house and bits of dub techno. We were all very into Basic Channel and all that stuff, which obviously had a big impact on the way that some of those early dubstep records sounded. So at that point the focus was very much dubstep, but anything kind of that focused on bass weight and stuff like that was something that interested us.
Actually, you took yourself the freedom to play other records, which at the time, as I listened to a lot of Rinse FM and stuff like that, and most of the shows couldn't afford or didn't want to play such a diverse selection as you guys picked. So, as a radio DJ, do you approach your DJ sets as a radio DJ, or do you defer those two selections? What's the selection process for a radio show or for a live show?
It's a difficult question because I've always seen the two things as being interlinked, somehow being connected. I'll take experiences that I've had on the radio and try and translate them into club situations if I've felt that something has gone particularly well. So they're definitely related in that respect. But for me, I think the freedom of selection and the ability to play a wider variety of music comes from the fact that we've always been, as you said before, kind of outsiders to the scene. So the onus was on us to try and provide something that nobody else was doing. So there wouldn't have been any point in me trying to be the best dubstep DJ in the world because like Youngster already exists, or you know, Mala already exists. There's no need for that. So when we were approaching our radio show, we always just wanted to try and represent something a bit different and do what came most naturally to us, which was just to play the records that we loved, kind of without too much regard for where they came from. So, we'd mix, you know, Peverlist records with, you know, techno records that came out on Sarco and stuff like that.
Wow.
Because the tempo is the same and the aesthetic was similar, even though they're from different places, they connect somehow. And because I grew up doing that, it's something that I've continued to do now.
But along the way, you, even though you had your really strong taste, you picked up some of the aesthetic of grime and dubstep mixing, such as you have. I've noticed you have a really energetic style of mixing, like 16 or 32 bar mixing, which is a strictly British thing, isn't it?
Yeah,
it's similar to what, for example, Ron Hardy was doing.
Yeah.
But that's, for me, that's the essence of house music. It's energetic.
Yeah.
So this short mixing, short mixes, quick switches, is this what you picked from UK bass continuum?
It's something that I definitely took from the UK and the DJs that I grew up listening to, who were playing jungle and grime and dubstep. But as you say, there's definitely connections to other worlds. Like I was really happy to hear a mix that I've talked about online before by a guy called Spencer Kinsey, mm-hmm. Who is another...
He disappeared.
Yeah, that's right. No one knows where he is. It's quite a sad story. But he was DJing records in Chicago, I think. And is that right? Is he a Chicago DJ?
Yeah, I think he's from Chicago.
And he would use a similar technique, like play short bursts of records, mix them very energetically, loads of like spin backs and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Like all characteristics that I associate with like the kind of UK school of mixing. So it was quite reassuring to hear somebody doing
the same
that, but
thing.
but with you know, Chicago and Detroit records
across the whole ocean.
That's kind of what I'm trying to do now.
Yeah, it's great. At the same time, you picked another quality of Jamaican sound system. For me, music is you took dubplate culture. You took the really best thing from dubplate culture. It's what's playing with playing exclusives, some things that weren't released anywhere else. Is that true?
That's very true, yeah. That's something I'll continue to do. And you're right, I don't think that is something that is done to the same extent in the worlds of house and techno. Mm-hmm. I'm not quite sure why that is, but I think it might have something to do with the fact that music has been around that much longer. And with most dance musics that grew out of the UK, their lifespan has always been bit shorter generally, and so the focus has always been on pushing forward as quickly as possible and trying to find the next thing. Mm-hmm. Like in the UK, I mean, historically, if you were to play in the UK, your crowd would never want to hear the record that came out last year or the record that came out a couple of years ago. They'd always want to be hearing the next thing, and like that is definitely a good thing to an extent. But what I want to do now is try and take the positive side of that, like the excitement of hearing new music, but to have the ability to play older music alongside it, because I don't think it's entirely healthy to just plow endlessly forward and kind of forget about what's happened in the past. I quite want to be able to do both.
I've read an interview with Paul Wolford, who's obviously a UK legend, and he said that he found interesting in your selection that you juxtaposed the old with the new. So you mixed a record that was 25 years older than the next one, but at the same time, when you in the mix, it seemed quite logical to everyone that they shared a same connection like they were made yesterday.
Yeah.
How has the availability of the records on the internet and the opportunity to switch and hear snippets all around every day, all the time. How has the internet changed your perception? Or maybe growing up in the internet age, do you think you hear music or select music differently than people from the 90s or the 80s?
I think there's two things going on there. I think it affects the way that I hear music, because I can hear new music now and, you know, tie it to things that have happened in the past. Like I could hear like a particularly tracky house record that came out a couple of weeks ago and go, oh yeah, that reminds me of like something that I have on Dance Mania that came out in 1991 or something like that. Maybe those two things would sound good together. But equally, I think it affects the ears and the minds of the producers that make the records too. So if a producer is able to go back and listen to records from 20, 25 years ago with the same ease that they can listen to records that came out a couple of months ago, I think that obviously affects the styles of music that they produce, because they're able to draw influence from loads and loads of different places. So it affects the DJ and it affects the producer at the same time. So those two things kind of go together to create this kind of new way of DJing, this kind of new
way of listening, actually.
Exactly, this new way of listening.
Eclectic,
yeah.
Listening, right?
Yeah, 100%.
We'll talk about this eclectic approach and tastes in music after a song which you chose from your record bag. Can you tell us something more about the song we're about to hear?
So the track is called Urban Badman, and it's a really classically UK record. The mix of the track that I've chosen is called the Black Dog Bite mix, and Black Dog are Sheffield techno producers essentially, And I was kind of inspired to pick it because we were having a conversation earlier about the way that a techno aesthetic can cross over into other styles and can link into other styles. So this tune to me is essentially a techno record, but it sounds like jungle, sounds like dubstep, it sounds like a load of other things all at once.
Great, let's listen to it. And then we'll come back. We're back, you're listening to Radio Student on 89.3 MHz. Ben UFO one of the three founders of Hassle Audio, is with us. Hello, Ben.
Hi, how's it going?
We listened to Black Dog Dub Byte Mix.
Yeah.
We're talking about how this song incorporated dub, syncopation, dancehall, bass lines, techno, house aesthetics, something that came up in the middle of in the beginning of the 90s.
Yeah, that's right. That kind of freedom to push through like genre boundaries and experiment with different styles. Like those guys were writing like really hard militant techno tunes at the same time as they were writing stuff like that, which is just something that I think it's really cool that people feel like they have the freedom to do that.
Do you think that the UK scene is again at this boiling melting pot moment?
I hope so, and I think ideally it will be something that might last a little bit longer this time as well. I don't see any reason, with all of the tools at our disposal now, I don't see any reason why people shouldn't continue to experiment in that vein indefinitely.
Do you think the dubstep has lasted for long as a musical genre before disintegrating and dissipating into other stuff?
Yeah, well, I mean, it depends kind of what you mean by dubstep, I guess, because to me, when I started listening to the music, this was about 2005, one of the things that people loved about it was that it was a very flexible genre and that really it was nothing but tempo. And I think it was Code 9 who said that to him dubstep was really just 140 beats per minute sub bass and then anything you want over the top of it. So taking that definition, I think dubstep is still ongoing and people are still making it now, and it's great and there's no reason why it should ever stop. But this happens across a lot of genres. What you find is that the more that one aspect of the music is kind of latched onto by people, the more that determines what people think that music is. So now if you speak to most people, dubstep to them is, you know, serrated, angry, wobble bass lines and mid-range. And yeah, and so, you know, you'll see YouTube videos where people are going, oh, this isn't dubstep, this doesn't have a dubstep bass line, this can't be dubstep.
And for me, actually, it's not dubstep anymore. It's not what I was brought on.
Well, exactly. That's kind of how I feel about it too. So I'm quite happy to distance myself from that now. Mm-hmm. I don't feel connected to that music really.
But it's surprising that dubstep has lasted really a really long time between before turning into this mid-range wobble tear out, you know. Sewage.
Yeah.
But jungle, in comparison, lasted for only maybe 3 years.
That's true, actually. Everyone says that dubstep developed really, really fast and reached the end of its lifespan very, very quickly. But I don't think that's actually the case. Like, no. As you say, like the developments in the UK between, say, 1991 and 1994 were huge. Mm. And then again between 1994 and 1997, like that traverses so much stuff, like happy hardcore through to the more stripped back UK hardcore, through to that kind of techno that the Black Dog were making, which links into all of that stuff. Mm. And jungle and garage and grime. It was like incredibly fertile, like crazy amounts of different music being made.
How has jungle influenced your music? I know you played a set at Forward.
Yeah, I played. I've done a couple of jungle sets in clubs and recorded something for the Boiler Room a couple of years ago, which was basically a tribute to all of the clubs that I was never able to go to because I was too young. But jungle is basically the first kind of dance music that I really got interested in, and so in that sense, it informs everything that I do. And it's just unfortunate that at the time that I got into it, I was too young to really be able to go out and experience it. And you know, equally, a lot of the music that I was digging back through had been released when I was, you know, 8 or 9 years old.
That's so, the same case for me also. I couldn't. Yeah. I can only imagine how it would be like living in those days. It was an interesting time because you had squats all over England, parties, and on one floor you had punks dancing to acid house, and on the second floor you had metalheads or house music fans dancing to dancehall. It's just everything all around that spirit seems to me that's appearing all over the world again.
It's amazing, like as you say, the crossover between sort of industrial and punk rock and stuff like that, into the early forms of dance music through those kind of squat and free party scenes, is like much more real and sort of tangible than a lot of people think. The more people that I meet that were involved in the music at that stage, the more I realised that dance music isn't this like sort of homogenous, self-enclosed bubble. It reaches out in all kinds of different directions.
As we said, you started off with death metal.
Yeah.
And you learned about dance music, electronic music, and found something more into that. But also, the band you were listening to, you said Dark Throne?
Yeah, I was basically listening to the early 90s Scandinavian black metal bands, actually. Mm-hmm. I always saw that as something quite separate from the dance music that I got into. But the more I start listening to that music again, the more I realise that it actually does have quite a lot in common with the music that I'm into now. So, like, if you look at the music that that Burzum went into making, mm-hmm. After Varg Vikernes went to prison, he started using synthesizers, started making essentially ambient music. A lot of it's not very good, but like it crosses in aesthetically with like a lot of the electronic music that I'm into, a lot of the dance music that I'm into. And as we were discussing earlier, I had this amazing experience recently where I went to play in Oslo in Norway and found out that the front man of Dark Throne, a guy called Fenris, actually DJs around that city and plays like house music and plays funk records and soul and disco, and actually has a tattoo of Richie Horton's little Plastic Man logo on his arm. It's like incredible. I never would have thought. And it just kind of cemented this idea in my head that like you can't separate all of this music and kind of create these little factions. It just doesn't make sense.
Doesn't make sense to separate music. As you said, black metal frontman DJs disco and funk and house music. There are also a lot of people in New York at the moment who play noise music and house music and techno.
That's right.
Same time. The Swedish crew, Sex Tags Mania, as you said, they are punk heads, right?
That's right, yeah, and you can see it aesthetically in their records too, in their press releases. There's a bunch of people like that. There's a great night in New York at the moment called The Bunker, which books great house and techno people alongside crazy like synth worshippers like Keith Fullerton Whitman and B Mask and people like that. And obviously genre boundaries and definitions and stuff are useful to an extent because we have to have a language for talking about music, but it becomes a negative thing when it becomes so tribal, I think.
Conservative.
Yeah, exactly.
That's, I think, most of us liked in your label, in your A&R politics, in your label, because you transcended these narrow, maybe, rules of dubstep and injected it with something really new. So your label actually has changed the dubstep scene many times by now, so I'm excited to hear what do you have in plan for further releases.
The only thing that we have confirmed at the moment is a double pack release by Pangea, which is an 8-track record. It's the biggest record that we've ever released by a single artist, which is, it's the first thing we've ever done by a single artist that's being released on CD as well. So I'm really looking forward to seeing what happens with that release. He's somebody who I think hasn't had the attention really that he deserves, either for his DJing or for his production. So I'm really hoping that one does well. And actually, we just released another single by Pearson Sound, which came out last week on Monday. And that's the first thing that he's done for the label in 2 years, even though he runs it as well. Okay. So that was nice. It's like a homecoming for him. And it felt appropriate that his first release on the label for 2 years is something that sounds pretty dissimilar from everything that he's done before. It's like a new phase of his production. It's something a bit weirder, something a bit more experimental. And the response to it has been typically divided. Mm-hmm. It seems to be happening a lot with our records at the moment. Some people love them and some people just have no idea what's going on.
Great.
But yeah, I mean, that's something that I want to pursue. I want to keep surprising people.
And what's the direction for you? What's in your record bag? What are we going to hear tonight in Club K4?
Well, we haven't sound checked yet, so I'm going to see what happens at the club. But everything that I've experienced today suggests that I'll be able to do whatever I want and play as weird as I like.
We expect no less, Mr. Thompson. Benio FY, I would like to thank you, in the name of all electronic music listeners and broader and wider, for this intelligent insight into modern electronic music, and I can't wait for your show later this night.
Thank you very much for bringing me here, it's been amazing so far. Thank
you. Tako, Ben UFO je pokazal ene par inteligentnih uvidov v svet elektronske glasbe in v dubstep moderno UK-based sceno, ki se odvija v Veliki Britaniji in tudi drugod po svetu. Nocoj bo nastopil v klubu K4 v sklopu otvoritve nove sezone kluba K4, ki se imenuje Preboj. Vsi vabljeni, vabljeni pa tudi k posluhu prenosa njegovega nastopa, ki se bo prav tako odvijal na Radiu Študent na frekvenci 89,3 MHz. Z vami smo bili z glasbo, selekcijo in duhom Ben UFO za Reglery 359 in za mikrofonom Dino. Poslušajte radio še naprej.
Intervju Radija Študent.